Hello and welcome to Literary Lodging, part of the Geek Show Podcast Network. We are the Geek Show's dedicated arts, books, culture and stuff we can't fit in anywhere else, I guess, podcast. I'm Graham and this week I've been joined by Rob.
The cultural crowbar is here.
And Andrew.
I mean, they didn't not invite me, so...
Well, we like to kick every show off by... Just asking what we've read, and I think I'll go first, because I think the mood might probably need lightening after this. I've been reading Al McCorgan by Gordon Byrne, the noted author and true crime writer. It's a sort of a what-if novel. What if the British light entertainment star Al McCorgan did not in fact die in the mid-60s, as we all definitely know she did, and I did not have to look that up. And instead lived into a quiet retirement in the 1980s. There were also heavy allusions to the Moors murders, which, you know, at first just appeared it was because Gordon Byrne's that kind of a cheerful bloke, but turns out to have a plot reason, which is entirely horrible at the end. So, yeah, that's what I've been having fun with.
Sounds delightful.
Yeah.
It was good.
Wow.
But yes, an odd companion to the last days of a pleasant, mild summer.
Okay.
I've been reading a lot of Black Panther comics.
Very good, yeah.
Yes, it was a kind of a thing Comixology did a little while back. Obviously with the kind of very tragic passing of Chadwick Boseman, they decided to just make every single Black Panther comic free, which I thought was a very nice gesture of them.
Yeah.
That's very cool, yeah.
Yeah, just literally just giving away hundreds of comics. So I've been working my way through some of those, been reading the most recent series that came out, written by Ta-Nehisi Coates, with art by Brian Stelfreeze and Chris Sprouse. And yeah, it's real good. And lots of stuff about sort of, you know, political intrigue and sort of what does it mean to be a king and sort of do monarchies really have a place in the world? Like, in the 21st century. And also a man dressed as a big black cat just kicking people in the face.
Nothing wrong with this. Nothing wrong with this whatsoever.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's definitely... Black Panther's definitely one of those characters I like a lot now, I think.
Cool. For me, there's more trash.
Well, I mean, am I the only person on this show who occasionally reads different stuff?
I do read different stuff.
Yes.
It's just... You know, when you're wallowing at the bottom of the trash heap, it just kind of, you know, you end up just really, really wallowing properly. You know, it's difficult to kind of, every time you try and claw your way out, another piece of trash catches your eye, and it might be extra shiny from, like, from being buffed up with all the scum and the ferrets and stuff.
Rob, are you basically the Buster for Jones of East Asian fantasy?
Kind of, yeah.
Oh, man.
See, there you go. That's a literary illusion.
I've got James Corden as a cat in my head now, and that's never going to go away.
Thankfully, there are no CG cats, anthropomorphic or otherwise, in this trash heap. What I do have instead is a very odd... I mean, this is more trash than normal, let's put it that way. This somehow slipped through my filters that I've carefully built up over time and hit me in the face with a left kick, going, "Hey, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me." It's called...
Are you well this week, Rob? Have you been inhaling paint fumes or something?
Yes, that's exactly it, because most of the work on the house has been done, so, you know, we finally have something that looks like a working kitchen now as well, so I can finally start moving stuff out of the living room, and finally the living room won't be like one person and a swung cat.
Sweet.
Anyway, the thing I've been reading is called The Player Returns After 10,000 Years, and I don't know why, but for some reason in Chinese and Korean, and not so much Japanese, but mainly Chinese and Korean fiction, they have this thing where they really want to exaggerate numbers. So it's like, oh, this planet is 50 million miles wide. I'm like, really?
Yes.
So it's about the quarter of the size of the sun, okay. It was like, oh, and he's lived for 3 billion years. I'm like, really?
Yeah, entropy would get to you before old age, really, wouldn't
no,
it?
No, boredom would get to you before any of that.
Well, yeah.
So, yeah, this is about a guy who, these gates start appearing on Earth, and he walks through this black thing, ends up in hell, but he's got this skill called Devourer, and then starts eating devils, getting more powerful, and okay. eventually rules the 9,000th circle of hell. I thought there were only, like, 7 circles of hell, but he ends up ruling the 9,000th one, which is, like, the highest one.
It's like all suburbs, it just expands over time.
Yeah, so anyway, he's got really, really bored of hell, and he doesn't really want to sleep with Lilith, who's this weird succubus thing with tentacles and lots of eyes on the ends of tentacles, who's
don't blame
apparently
him.
In love with him. So he, you know, he basically makes a beeline back to Earth after 10,000 years, only to find Earth has changed a lot as well. And it's trash. It's absolutely diabolically bad.
Oh dear.
It's like I said, it's more trash than I would usually look at, but for some reason I think it might be the paint fumes, or it might be just the shock of possibly no longer living in a cave piled up with all sorts of crap.
Interesting. I have an important Pyrrhic victory update.
Oh.
All I can think of now is T'Challa, King of Wakanda, bounding through the trees while singing Jellicles can and Jellicles do. And I don't know if I like Black Panther anymore.
So yeah. That's been the story of this week. Of this fortnight, in fact.
Not even that book. The story of last fortnight has weirdly been our Black Panther Cats crossover.
No. I'm not even thinking of that.
No.
There are certain things, for certain filters in my brain are still working fine. I haven't inhaled enough paint for that yet.
Do you think that's what 2020 has been building to? That's going to be just the final thing what finally tips it all over the edge.
Yes! The announcement that Black Panther 2 will be pressing ahead and the villains will be Mungo Jerry and Rumpel Teaser.
Or worse, the new Black Panther could be Jason Derulo.
Oh, boy. Well, later on in the show, we've got a quiz about bad translations, which is a big running theme of ours.
Cool.
But before that, we've, as ever, got some news stories. And the first one goes back to a trillion years ago in February 2020.
The way, way back?
Yes.
Hang on. Is this like some weird Korean novel I haven't read yet? A trillion years ago.
In February, a 48-year-old school librarian from Leicestershire, who was asked to remain anonymous, so you know this story ended well, was leaving her job. She had asked several times for extra assistance in the library. She felt that the library in general was being ignored and being unfairly targeted by school board cuts. And on her way out, she decided to leave a parting message. Placing on the top shelves of the library, outward-facing on display, novels such as The Twits by Roald Dahl. There was one called Betrayed. There was a copy of Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury. She thought that would probably do as a passing shot, and presumed that when she'd gone, someone would come in and rearrange it. Fast forward to August 2020. Boris Johnson is trying to explain what was then this week's big government mistake, the whole A-level algorithm thing.
Wow, I can kind of see where this is going.
He goes to explain that the downgrading of several children's exam results based on their social class was not the government's fault at all. It was the fault of what he described as a mutant algorithm, which, like everything Boris says, is a catchy phrase designed to mean absolutely nothing. And he decides to make this announcement in front of a crowd of school children in a school library in Leicestershire in front of copies of Fahrenheit 451 and The Twits.
Oh, beautiful.
Oh, that's amazing. I knew where it was heading, but it's still amazing that the confirmation is there. And also, mutant algorithm. I want the Wolverine algorithm then.
Yeah, the one that, you know, yes. I think I've read an issue where Black Panther fights him.
I mean, is there a Professor X algorithm where he just knows everything and is a smart is a smart ass who sits down all the time?
I mean, the government would like us to think this is what Dominic Cummings is, but I have my doubts.
I mean, just get rid of the smart bit and you're there.
And he's kind of the Armin Zola of politics, isn't he?
He is, yes.
You know, he's not powerful enough to be the leader. He only qualifies as, like, the leading henchman.
Yeah, and he's just the ugly little toady who sticks in the back and then uploads his mind into a computer so he can have a 1,000-year Reich.
Yeah.
And he does have a weirdly big face as well.
Yes!
But no, that's good, because that's... I'm sure when the librarian did, she must have known that, no, this is an incredibly petty act of revenge that is going to entertain me and no one else. And it's such a beautiful setup.
Can I just ask, can we do a round of applause for this librarian? Because I think, round of applause.
I think my favourite thing about this, other than, you know, the whole story, is that this protest was designed to show that the school was ignoring its library. And the fact that a scurrilous message could remain in the library for 6 months and still be ignored when they knew the nation's news cameras would be on them kind of proves a point, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so.
That's several kinds of amazing.
But let us now move on from a photograph of Boris Johnson to something which I feel cannot be connected to a photograph of Boris Johnson in any meaningful way. Let's talk about racist selfies.
I thought you were going to go with the word handsome, but...
Yes, in my file of actual news headlines that I'm pretty sure were at the start of an episode of The Day Today, Artlist has the headline, Tate breaks ties with art dealer Anthony Doffey after racist selfies appear on social media.
And when they say racist selfies, was he taking pictures of him wearing a white hood?
It's not actually a million miles off.
I was going to make a joke, but really anything I say is just going to pale in comparison to whatever the truth is, isn't it?
I think you should probably get the joke in first.
Yeah.
Oh no, you've called my bluff, I have to think of a joke.
Yeah, Anthony Doffey was previously the subject of inappropriate behaviour towards several women over the 1990s and 2000s. When that matter was investigated, it was discovered that he had a £200 million art collection, so they weren't going to be investigating this any further. And it has now emerged that he engaged in a weird harassment campaign towards a black woman by sending her photographs of himself with a gollywog doll.
Wow. I mean, I'm cringing at the fact that you've even said that.
Yeah. And this has finally caused them to break ties with him. All artworks that he has that are on loan from the Tate will be returned to his private collection, which... Is it only me kind of wondering what those artworks might be? Like a pristine first edition print of D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation, say, or...?
Possibly. I mean, I'm more wondering, you know, who did he steal them from during World War II? Because it does have all the hallmarks. You have a racist art dealer with a multi-million pound collection. And the first question you're going to ask is, so this guy likes the Aryan race, does he?
What did you do in the war, Daddy?
Look at all these paintings of dogs. It's why they're LAH originals.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of a lesson in the limits of cancel culture, which people talk about now as if it's some unstoppable force that erases people from history. But this is someone who's part of a massive sexual harassment investigation. And trustees at the Tate renewed links with him in April 2019. I mean...
After the harassment case was out in the open.
After the harassment case, after the Jimmy Savile revelations, after the Harvey Weinstein case, it's not like you can say, oh, April 2019, it was a different time. We had different values back then.
I mean, I feel like the Tate can and most definitely will.
Yeah, I'm sure they will.
I mean, I'm just stuck on the idea of the Tate actually having values.
They have the values of crawling to rich people and getting loans of their paintings.
Now I've got like the Tate trustees just kind of sliding in on the bellies and just some rich art dealer going, lick my boots, lick them.
I'm so glad that sentence ended with boots.
Well, you know, it is the Tate, so everything is for art.
Yes. I
made myself kind of want to vomit when I said that.
I was going to say, I think I've seen some Viennese actionist performance pieces that resemble what you're implying. Now, anyone who hasn't been awake for the whole of 2020 may be surprised that we're going to jump from that straight to another story about a white person doing something really weird and racial. Just giving you a second to compose yourself after that, but...
I know, I mean, it's such a rare occurrence.
I mean, like, from Al Jolson onwards, has there been a week?
There probably hasn't been a week, but... This
really, it's the bounty of news stories, isn't it? Where, you know, you open up the celebrations and it's just full of them.
Yes. This is with regards to Duke University Press, whose editorial director, Gisela Fasado, has had to speak out against one of their authors, Jessica A. Krug, who wrote a book called Fugitive Modernisms in 2018 about slave rebellions and the Underground Railroad. It has been revealed that Krug, a black Latino scholar, is actually a white person.
Wow.
There is some information about the method she took to pull off this subterfuge, and I've got to say, it's not exactly the crime of the century, this. I mean...
It didn't involve boot polish or something like that, did it?
My standard for weird identity fraud crimes is set at a very sort of talented Mr. Ripley level, and this is not worthy of that.
Is this like stage performances from It Ain't Our Fault, Mum, or something like that? Are we talking that level?
Or is it like that one bit in Ocean's 12 where Julia Roberts' character has to infiltrate a place by pretending to be Julia Roberts?
I remember when that movie came out and everyone was really angry about that bit, and I thought it was funny.
I mean, I'll give it to it. It's the one bit of the film I remember.
I'm an Ocean's 12 denialist. Leave me alone. It was good.
It's supposed to be meta. It's meta acting.
Exactly. God. Julia Roberts spent years researching how to play Julia Roberts and we just throw it back in her face.
I'm not even entirely convinced you're joking about that. It does seem like something Julia Roberts would do.
Yes.
It's not like Wesley Snipes when he was filming Blade and just spent like all the time in character.
Yeah, weirdly he was in character as the Wesley Snipes from 30 Rock. Yeah. But yeah, here's how Jessica Krug got under the door with her co-option of black Latina identity. In an email exchange in 2017, Fasado asked, how do you pronounce your last name? And Krug said, Oh, it's actually pronounced Cruz.
Like, wow.
Like Penelope Cruz. That's it.
Wow.
I feel like I've wasted a lot of my life watching things like Hustle, to be honest.
There is a more serious part of this story. Krug did take scholarship money that was earmarked for minority authors, and Fasado has been asked, you know, would it not be the ethical thing to redistribute that money among the people who she has took that money from? And the truth is, as she acknowledges in the last paragraph of her blog post, none of Jessica Krug's books actually made a profit.
Why am I not surprised?
Crime of the century, apart from the fact where it was really dumbly planned out and she didn't get anything from it.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's genuinely made my day a bit. It's committing fraud so that you can fail to sell books.
It's crazy like a fox.
I'm sorry, but it's just... it's bonkers.
It's incredible. Yeah, I mean, I thought Rachel Dolezal was a hard bar to clear, but at least she probably drew a wage at some point.
Yeah?
I mean, I guess it turns out crime really doesn't pay.
Yes! All those 1930s movies were right.
Man, I guess I will have to stop smoking all this jive tea then.
Oh, Andrew, you've given me a pivot.
Oh, superb.
Because I was just going to say, this is another story about frauds, because I am, as ever, as everyone knows, fascinated by con artists and hoaxes. But there is a link here in that this, too, is a story about drugs written by someone who clearly doesn't know anything about drugs.
Well, my fancy is tickled. Please proceed.
Philip Whitcomb has been promoting his memoir about being the adoptive son of a British SAS officer, trying to track his parents, and finding out, and stop me when you work out that this story might not be true, finding out that he can't meet his adoptive father, because you see, his adoptive father was Pablo Escobar, and he wasn't adopted. He was taken from the Colombian drug baron's compound in a daring SAS raid.
Wow.
Is it the all of it?
It might just be the all of it. In fairness, Whitcomb did, you know, commit to the part. He grew a big moustache. He occasionally called himself Roberto. And that's about it.
And his surname's Whitcomb.
Do people just need a crash course on how race and ethnicity works?
His surname's Whitcomb. Yeah,
he got one, but it was from Jessica Krug. That's the problem.
And once more with feeling, his surname's Whitcomb.
This story has been pulled apart by a number of people. Some people have gone through his book and tried to add up the details of his life. It is revealed that if the years Whitcomb gives were correct, he would have been conceived when Escobar was 11 or 12 and started to go to school at the age of 2.
Surely there's people whose job is to fact check these kind of... Is this not what a publisher does? Maybe I should be a publisher, because they seem to do absolutely nothing.
Yes! I'm just staggered at how many novelists manage to create a timeline for their characters that makes sense without this happening.
I mean, you would think. See, I was going to applaud this guy for kind of going big instead of doing just a... Oh yeah, it's pronounced Jorge. You can literally just Wikipedia Pablo Escobar date of birth.
Yes!
And go from there.
But that would be too easy, Andrew. That would be far too easy.
He claimed that the daring SAS raid occurred when he was less than a year old, but he also appears to have some recollection of it, which I mean, I'm sure it was very memorable for all involved, but you were less than one.
See, I have difficulty remembering what happened yesterday. Never mind. Yes.
I mean, to be fair, he was clearly a very advanced one-year-old since he started school the next year.
That's true. My favourite clue as to Philip Wickholm's deception was unearthed by Eaton Smallman, who works for the I newspaper, who goes through a lot of the telltale signs that I have already isolated. But he also found something else. He also found a forum for people who had been to the school that Whitcomb went to, where they were all laughing at both his book and his stupid moustache.
Fantastic. You know, actually, I respect a lot of the people like who would actually bother to debunk these claims. Because it must be very easy to just look at this kind of book and go, I mean, really, what's the point? Because it's so clearly fake. But no, I think it is important this one at least does, like, the bare minimum fact check of, well, let's check the school records to see if he ever went there. Oh, no, he didn't.
Oh, if he did, he was not too.
Yeah.
It's just, at least someone's put some modicum of effort into something relating to this story.
Yes.
The thing that I have to ask, right, there's a thing that's been happening in the technology world, in the gadget world especially,
yeah,
that involves Escobar, right?
Okay.
And this coming out is just kind of the cherry on top of all of that. See, what Escobar as a corporation maybe have been doing, I don't know if you've heard about the Escobar phone.
No.
Right. The Escobar phone, the first one, was basically all they did, by some means, intercepted a certain type of and brand of phone, stuck Escobar stickers over it, and sent it out to a bunch of YouTube reviewers, you know, just randomly. And, you know, I watched some of these reviews, like, we've been sent this, and we don't know what it is. And then they opened it up, it was like, it's an Escobar phone. Okay. Do we really want to get involved with this?
Yes.
Turns out you know, all of them concluded the phone is basically a fake. It's like a Samsung, whatever. And then the Escobar 2 phone, which is like a folding phone, but it was like the Galaxy Fold. It's like, is this a thing that's going to sweep across the world now where everyone's pretending to be Escobar?
I think that is a very appropriate story, because my lifelong fascination with serial fabricators basically comes from a guy at my school who, and this was back when mobile phones were considered quite a luxury, yuppie accessory, said that he had a mobile phone and came in the next day with a TV remote control with an aerial sellotaped onto it.
Oh, that's, yeah. That's a classic.
Yeah. So it's nice to realise that he was actually a tech pioneer.
I wonder if Robert Wickham's even bothered watching Narcos. Can you imagine if it's kind of like he got about halfway through episode one and just said, nah, not for me?
We close out this week's fraud news with a rather different story about a painting called Head of a Bearded Man that was misidentified as a Rembrandt fairly early on after its discovery. Nobody has yet worked out who the actual painter was until tests were done by the University of Oxford, with whom it resides in their permanent collection. And we now can say for near certain that the fake Rembrandt is in fact a genuine Rembrandt.
Okay.
Again, I feel like our kind of historians and curators are falling into the same category as con men for me now, where it seems there's clearly a lot less training and work needed than I thought.
In fairness, I mean, when I look at it, I think that really looks like a Rembrandt, but I am aware that in order to say it is a genuine Rembrandt, perhaps a tiny bit more work should be done, which is why they tested the wood panel it was painted on and found out it was from the same wood as Andromeda, a genuine Rembrandt.
Okay.
So that's nice. That's good for the Ashmolean, the museum in which it is held.
But is that not the kind of thing you're supposed to do straight away? Just some any kind of test, really.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know when did this come into the Ashmolean's possession? It was bequeathed in 1951. Okay, yeah, they totally could have done something.
Yeah, I mean, even then, I feel like it was a bit more advanced than just kind of picking up a Rembrandt, holding it next to it, going, nah.
You keep saying the Ashmolean, which, to be honest, sounds like some weird cosmic supervillain from some superhero comic.
My God, it does, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's right. He was the one who teamed up with Mutant Algorithm.
No, I think that was the buddy cop movie.
It does cycle back to my favourite fact about art forgery ever, which is that to make ends meet in his early years, Michelangelo made fake ancient Greek sculptures, all of which are now more valuable as genuine Michelangelos than they ever would have been as Greek sculptures.
Oh, that's delightful.
Yes.
Yep.
Art is very silly sometimes, and I enjoy it a lot.
Yep. Completely co-sign.
You know the Statue of David?
Mm.
Have you heard the story about the Statue of David, where before you go to see the Statue of David, there's a smaller Statue of David outside? So a lot of people now are basically just stopping at the smaller Statue of David and avoiding the real Statue of David completely. It's like an exact copy of it, just outside, away from all the crowds.
That's very silly. I hadn't heard that.
I found this out and I was like, oh, that's all kinds of amazing.
It really is, yeah.
It's like before you go to see the Mona Lisa, there's a smaller copy of the Mona Lisa, like passport-sized, just on the wall.
What if they found the smaller Statue of David inside the actual Statue of David, and then when they open up the small one, there'll be an even smaller one inside that?
Oh, wow.
What if you think of, like, 100 years' time, it's going to spark some kind of bigger David conspiracy theory?
Maybe, yeah, yeah. Oh, we don't really have to go 100 years into the future, do we? It could happen, like, next Tuesday.
Actually, yes, definitely there will be some kind of theory by next week that, like, the Art Illuminati is hiding the real Statue of David, which is actually 20 feet tall and has dicks.
I was hoping it'd be in 100 years and it'd be written by someone called Yosemite Brown, whose great great granddad was Dan Brown.
Yes, and he doesn't know it. There's a secret Dan Brown bloodline,
but he's called Yosemite Brown.
I see, because he was kidnapped from Dan Brown's secret South American compound by the SAS.
Yes. Yes. By rednecks who invaded across the border.
I mean, if Dan Brown is as honest about paternity as he was about reading the Holy Blood and the Holy Grail in that car case, it's entirely possible he's got more kids than the Prime Minister.
That's a cutting joke you made there, Graham.
Thank you. I feel like I'm the only person who remembers how disingenuous he was during that trial. I mean, don't get me wrong. They deserved to lose because they were basically saying that a book they'd marketed as non-fiction was plagiarised by a fiction writer. And you think, okay, what next? Next time someone writes a World War II novel, the History Channel sue them. So, fair enough there. But Brown was absolutely full of crap on the stand. I decided to write this book about a very esoteric subject that's only had a few books written about it before. I have never heard of the most famous one. Isn't that strange? What's a book?
Does that mean my weird, long-running effort to write some strange Chinese trash fiction sci-fi version of the Bible is going to run into problems?
I mean, that's a bit weird, isn't it, that Dan Brown came up with a story that doesn't really hold up to any kind of critical evaluation.
The famous man talked rubbish in the big courtroom.
Do you think Dan Brown and J.K. Rowling just secretly meet up in like random rural pubs just to discuss ideas.
I wasn't going to talk about Rowling this week, but I just want to say how it absolutely rules that through her own stupidity, she is now having to hawk copies of a 900-page mystery novel where everyone knows who the killer is. Good luck, Joe.
I just find it hilarious that I was watching the thing about world building in fiction and why J.K. Rowling failed at it. And I was like, yeah, that's a very good point. When she came up with like all the Harry Potter world and everything like that and Diagon Alley and all the other stuff, she didn't bother explaining it. And if she didn't bother explaining it, everyone would have been fine. But then she kept trying to fill in the blanks in order to justify that she's an actual literary person.
Not a fan of the magic poop revelation.
I think poop was done better in that backwards episode of Red Dwarf.
Yes, the one which Christopher Nolan has just directed the big budget remake of.
Yes. Oh, please say you use that Red Dwarf episode as a reference when you talk about it.
I think we might have. Okay, final piece of news before we go on to the quiz. This is a look at what theatres could be like when they reopen, because everyone knows that the government has been following the science, and the science says that cinemas are safe, pubs are incredibly safe, but theatres are dangerous. That just makes sense. We can all agree, right?
No.
No, it doesn't. It makes no sense whatsoever. But in order to prove that a theatre production can go ahead in this age of social distancing, Sleepless, a musical version of Sleepless in Seattle, has just opened in the West End. And it's a big show. It's a full-on musical. You know, it's not like Ralph Fiennes reading out David Hare's emails or whatever the hell that one is. Oh no, this is big stuff and they are rising to the challenge.
Okay.
For a start, the characters are only allowed to hug, hold hands and dance, which you've got to say in a musical version of Sleepless in Seattle, that's quite a lot of the action.
Yeah.
They are only allowed to do that if they get a nose swab every morning.
Okay. I mean, Sleepless in Seattle, just, if I remember the movie correctly,
yeah,
there's not an actual kiss until almost the end of the movie.
It's worked out quite well for them in that way.
Yeah. Although I do feel like it's, you know, not quite the same if the entire film builds up to an emotionally charged handshake.
Yes, or doing that silly elbow bumping thing.
Yeah.
The handshake, oh, you mean like You've Got Mail?
Oh, You've Got Mail would be an even better one to do now.
Yeah, I know, because they wouldn't even need to be in the same room.
Yeah, you could just do it by Zoom.
Exactly. But yeah, I understand the nose swabs and everything like that, but it's not like every time they greet each other, they're like greeting each other like Inuits and rubbing noses or something like that.
You're right, it isn't like that. I never really thought about how Inuits coped with this, but yeah, it must be tough for them.
I don't know. Can the virus survive in that temperature?
I mean, it's probably better for it. It is kind of a cold.
I'm not a scientist. Like every politician making decisions.
I'm not a scientist, but I do have a social media account, which I think you'll find entitles me to talk rubbish about COVID-19.
I'm going to talk rubbish about COVID-19 because I'm speaking as a mother.
I've always
Rosie O'Donnell throwback.
I mean, I think we'll all be fine as long as we just decide we're not going to get ill.
Yes. Yeah, thank you, Ian Brown. I actually listened to that Ian Brown protest song about how the government were going to put chips in us with the COVID vaccine, and it might surprise you, but musically, it's no great shakes.
That is a shame, isn't it?
Yeah. I'll be honest, during the lockdown, I was really, really suffering from like major withdrawal because I needed someone to put chips in me with a nice battered fish. And I was, for about 6 weeks when all the chip shops near where I work were closed, I was just, all I could think about was battered fish and chips with salt and vinegar on them. So yes, putting chips in me, if the government wants to put chips in me, you know, that guy, that's fine. But just shovel them into my mouth.
The final thing I want to notice about Sleepless is that, I mean, if this isn't making lemons into lemonade, I don't know what is. They have on the merchandise stall a series of Sleepless branded masks and visors.
There we go. That's some smart thinking.
Yeah.
I was going to say, this ain't some weird superhero version of Sleepless, is it?
Well, no, I think it's for the audience, not the cast.
Oh, right, okay, right. I completely misunderstood that.
Although I would watch a version of Sleepless in Seattle where everyone just sounds like they're Bane.
No, because then it's going to end up like that South Park episode.
Bane was ahead of his time, wasn't he, in a lot of ways?
Yeah. Exactly. Bane was socially isolating before it was cool.
Right, are we ready for a quiz?
Yes. Yes, I think we are.
No, but let's do it anyway.
We were talking the other week about the miracle of Google Auto Translate, which I remember back in the early days of search engines was one of the most reliably using things on the internet. So I've translated a series of quotes from English to Bulgarian and back, and I've got to say, thanks to the miracle of machine learning, it was pretty good. They were basically, you know, give or take a word or two, the same as the original. So I translated them from English to Bulgarian to Javanese to English again, and yes, some of them are gibberish now.
Hooray!
I don't think this is going to go well, Andrew.
I have 8 quotes at various levels of difficulty, all of them from celebrated novels or plays or poems. And since some of these are probably more famous as quotes than as part of works of literature, I'm going to be generous with points if you can get either the author, the book, or the quote itself, you're getting a point.
Okay.
Okay, good, because I'm going to need every advantage I can get.
I mean, some of them are quite simple. Like the first one, for example, is music has the charm of calming wild animals.
Yeah, something, the music soothing the savage beast thing.
Oh, yeah.
Rob, are you going with that?
Yeah, I'm going to go with that as well. Music soothing the savage beast.
Yeah, it's, and no one guesses, everyone thinks this quote is from Shakespeare, including me for quite a long time, but it's from William Congreve's The Mourning Bride, and it is, as you say, music hath charms to soothe the savage beast, one all. Second quote. So we won. The ship against now continues to go back in time.
So we won. The ship against now continues to go back in time.
Yeah.
Obvious answer would be the time machine, but yeah, I'll go with that. Time machine.
Okay.
Man, calling your time machine the ship against now is kind of rad. Goodness, the ship against now. I mean, I'm trying to think of something that wouldn't be the time machine that would still make sense of this absolute gibberish. No, alas, I'll have to go with the time machine because I can't think of an alternative.
Okay, both of you went with the time machine. I am delighted to announce that it is, of course, The Great Gatsby.
I think I'm going to need the original quote.
The original quote. The original quote is, "So we beat on, boats against the current, borne back ceaselessly into the past."
Yeah, I see it now.
Yeah, when it's explained to us, we understand it, but
it has taken it slightly literally, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, that would make The Great Gatsby even better if at the end Nick Carraway just hopped in his magic time boat.
Yes. Surprised Baz Luhrmann passed that opportunity up, to be honest. Okay, quote number 3. You are still an unwanted silent bride.
You are still an unwanted silent bride.
Yeah. I mean, sounds like it could be Handmaid's Tale, something like that.
Okay.
I would have gone with something like Pride and Prejudice.
Right, right.
But unless is there some kind of novel where a man falls in love and then, I guess, has a falling out with a mannequin.
Oh, yeah, there's Mannequin and Mannequin on the Move, which few people realise were based on the works of George Bernard Shaw.
No, it wouldn't be Pygmalion, would it?
Clever. Yes, didn't think of that.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with what I said.
Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Andrew, you had The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, why not? I mean, I guess because it's probably the wrong answer is why not, but I'll stick with it anyway.
Well, great result, guys. It's John Keats' Ode on a Grecian Urn, which begins with the line, "Thou still unravished bride of quietness."
Of course. How did we not guess it?
I feel that translating "still unravished" as "unwanted" is unnecessarily harsh.
It is. It's a very uncharitable interpretation, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, quote number 4. "The folly associated with power is a fierce enemy that justice can afford."
Sorry, say that again.
"The folly associated with power is a fierce enemy that justice can afford."
So I hate it because I feel like that one, it's one of those ones where I feel like I almost know what it is. But obviously
yeah,
I don't,
I get that
because
feeling.
It's an incomprehensible mess of just word salad. I'm also still stuck on what if Ode on a Grecian Urn just opened with, "Look at this bloody ugly vase." I want to say it's maybe from something like A Tale of Two Cities. Ooh, or maybe something like War and Peace or Crime and Punishment.
See, I was going to go with something like, I was going to go with something more recent, like Catch 22. Yeah, I'll stick with that.
Catch 22, and what one are you going with, Andrew?
Oh, I'll go Tale of Two Cities, since that's the one that popped into my head first.
Okay. It's from a book called No Name in the Street by James Baldwin, and the original quote is, "Ignorance allied with power is the most ferocious enemy justice can have." And I like that because it's actually reversed what Baldwin was writing about. It said that justice can afford that as an enemy.
I can kind of see where the error happens, but thinking about it too hard makes my brain hurt.
Yeah.
They have contradicted one of America's great political thinkers. Good work, Google Translate.
Yeah, but I can kind of see where it's like it's one of those sentence structure things, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Okay, number 5. "Dude, man or woman, who does not like a novel that good should be very foolish."
It starts with "dude."
It starts with "dude."
Can I at least does the original quote start with the word "dude"?
It does not.
Fantastic.
Right.
For no other reason than the idea greatly amuses me, I want to say it's based on something by P.G. Woodhouse.
Much Ado About Nothing.
Okay. So Much Ado About Nothing or something by P.G. Woodhouse. I must say, Rob had the author, if not the book, earlier. It's from Northanger Abbey by Jane Austen.
Oh.
The original quote is, "The person, be it gentleman or lady, who has not pleasure in a good novel must be intolerably stupid."
How do you go from "the person" to "dude"?
Dude, Where's My Car would be a very different film.
Yes, definitely, yes. And Northanger Abbey would be a much better novel.
Yes.
I do like that the translation engine shares my prejudice that all Jane Austen is just a load of wordy, overwritten ways of calling people idiots.
I feel like I'd almost like Jane Austen if I just imagine at the end of every sentence her character's going, "my dude."
It is a truth universally acknowledged, dude, that, yeah, it's much better. Okay, quote number 6. "We are hypocrites. We have to be careful about what we pretend to be."
Because I feel like this is another one where I'm kind of going to know it when you say it.
think, yeah, it might be someone who is in your wheelhouse, Andrew. I may be wrong.
Say again for me, Graham.
We are hypocrites. We have to be careful about what we pretend to be. Do you want... Should we do clues, or shall Rob just keep passing that kidney stone?
Yes, give us... I think we need clues.
Okay, it's from a book set during World War II.
Book set during World War II?
Hmm.
It's, you know,
by an American author.
I'm going to say Catch-22, because it sounds like something that's supposed to be some kind of pithy sort of play on words a bit.
Yeah.
But it's just been horribly mistranslated into nothing.
Yes.
I can't remember. Was All Quiet on the Western Front of book?
Ooh,
was, but that's...
Oh, no.
Hang on. Slaughterhouse 5 was...
That's my oh no, is I don't know, is it Catch-22 or Slaughterhouse 5? Because, damn it, Graham, it's one of the two, isn't it? It's one of the two.
Yeah, I'm going with Slaughterhouse 5.
Decision time.
I hate this. Oh, damn it, I'm going to have to change my answer because I think it's Slaughterhouse 5.
Rob?
I've gone with Slaughterhouse 5.
Well, I can give you 1 point each because although it's not Slaughterhouse 5, it is Kurt Vonnegut. The quote is from Mother Night, and it's, I think, one of the wisest things written in a novel. We are what we pretend to be, so we must be careful about what we pretend to be.
Wise words?
Mm.
See, that sounds a lot more kind of wise and full of meaning than just we're hypocrites.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, one of my other options was going to be Captain Corelli's mandolin, but then I remembered Nicolas Cage.
Dude, we are hypocrites.
Well, my brain went Captain Corelli's mandolin, Nicolas Cage, that episode of Community where Ahmed has to look at whether Nicolas Cage is a good actor or not.
Yes, before Rob's chain of thought leads him even further into the weeds. Quote 7, particular favourite of mine, this quote 7 is, I have written a book and cannot write. I'll never be able to believe what I want. I can't live.
I've written a book and I cannot write?
Yeah.
I'll never be able to believe what I want. I cannot live.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, that's basically just a Coldplay lyric, isn't it? Just can you say it again, Graham, but in a much drearier voice?
I've written a book that I cannot write. I will never be able to believe what I want. And I can't live.
Oh my god, it was written by Chris Martin. You know, I actually don't care what the right answer is now, I'm just going to have to go with that.
Superb. Shall I give you a clue?
Yes.
It's a major living British author.
A major living British author?
Yes. We've still got some.
And it's not Hilary Mantel, is it?
I cannot answer until Andrew was given a guess.
I'm going with Hilary Mantel.
Okay, Hilary Mantel. Serious answer. I'll say Kazuo Ishiguro.
Okay. Any guesses? Just to claw some extra points in, any guesses as to the book?
I'm going to guess at Bringing Up the Bodies.
Okay.
If I remember the title correctly.
I'm going to look at a list of Kazuo Ishiguro's books and randomly guess one. Say The Remains of the Day.
Okay. 1 point to Rob.
Oh, yes. No.
It is Hilary Mantel. It was actually from Wolf Hall, and the original quote is, I have written books and I cannot unwrite them. I cannot unbelieve what I believe. I cannot unlive my life.
It's actually rather different to what the quote is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's less of a string of self-directed insults, yes. Final quotation. Eliza's chest curled around Ezra's bustling mouth and the madness of his enormous words.
Oh, that's an easy one. H.P. Lovecraft at the Mountains of Madness.
Hang on.
I'm hanging.
Tell me the quote again.
Eliza's chest curled around Ezra's bustling mouth and the madness of his enormous words.
Oh my God, Graham. Oh God, you didn't. You didn't, you absolute monster. You absolute monster. He did. It's Morrissey, it's List of the Lost, isn't it?
Son of a bitch, Graham.
Yep. 2 points to both of you for that, and the actual quote, as if we could forget, is Eliza's breasts barrel rolled around Ezra's howling mouth and the pain frenzy of his bulbous salutation.
Oh.
God damn, that was the thing that immediately popped into my head and I just cast it aside as, well, no, that's not right, is it? That's just a coincidence that it sounds exactly as horrific as a Morrissey sex scene.
I mean, I was thinking, why does that sound familiar? Why do I know that?
What I'm saying is, Lovecraft was the tamer option that I decided to go for.
Yeah.
My favourite thing about this translation is that when it gets up to bulbous salutation, it just gives in and says enormous words.
Even Google Translate can't handle Morrissey's bulbous salutation. Oh, and that may actually be the episode title.
It's a very different version of Bootylicious by Destiny's Child that you're proposing here. So at the end of that, Andrew has 4 points and Rob has 5.
Yes! I finally won one.
We have finally found a quiz that Andrew cannot bluff his way through.
I hate it. Never again.
Partly because both of us... partly because both of us were having to guess. Like crazy. I mean, the clues helped a bit, but before that I was literally going... Please narrow it down.
Should have probably given some clues earlier on, really.
Maybe. I figure what happened is that the anti-logic that usually guides me through these things collided with the just complete nonsense of it already. And and just kind of brain
cancel each other out.
Yes. Like when you do two rights.
Yes. Well, I think that covers it for this week.
I mean, you are the one who plans the show, so I'll assume yes.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Can we just abruptly end the episode there?
Oh, yeah. It's me. It's my turn, isn't it?
It's your turn every week, in fact.
Yes. So, if you want to catch any of our previous episodes, then you'll find them all on our website or on Audioboom, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. On our website, you also find like reviews of video games and films and stuff like that. You also find our YouTube videos, which are mainly on video games at the moment, but we will be expanding our range in the future. And that's about it from us for this episode. We'll see you all next time. Until then, I've been Rob.
I've been Graham.
And I've been Andrew.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.